Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Okay, so welcome to the session. And I'm going to mention this is going to be how to listen and speak from the heart with Jayaraja. And I'm just going to tell you a few things about him. So he's been a Buddhist. This man here, can you see him? He's been a Buddhist and meditation teacher for over 25 years. He's a skilled practitioner of NVC, trained with Marshall Rosenberg, who you probably know. I would tell you that he has a diploma in Gestalt therapy, but instead I'm going to tell you that he's a totally awesome footballer, because that's a more interesting thing to know. So we look forward to hearing what you have to say, Jayaraja, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Harmony. So thanks. If you've kind of given up your evening, or depending on what time of day it is, you've come and joined me here. I'm in London. I don't know where you are, but if you've kind of given up your evening to come and join me, thank you. Yeah, that just want to take a moment to let that sink in, that there's other people here. And also those are people who will hopefully watch this at a later date, though they'll probably regret having done that, but we'll see what happens. So listening and speaking from the heart. One of the things I often do live talks and workshops, and I usually bring chocolate to my workshops. And so I've brought some this evening, but there's me and there's the two tech guys who are here with me. So they're going to have to eat chocolate on behalf of us all.
Oh, no.
All right. So are you guys okay with that?
We can do that.
Yeah. Okay. Leo, can you kind of pass that? So what? So when I don't normally eat chocolate at the start, but because what will happen is I'll put it in my mouth will salivate, I'll start to struggle to speak. Thank you. I'll keep these for later, yeah? But just so as you can enjoy the experience, I want you to really kind of feel into that. I will manage to put this in my mouth in a moment, but just. So what do you notice goes on with you? Have I started to frustrate the hell out of you yet? But so if I have, that's a good sign. It means that some part of your brain is kind of picking up the messages that my body is sending, and you're sort of thinking, put that bloody chocolate in your mouth. So, and I've not quite managed it, yeah? Okay, so this is, I'm not sponsored by Montezuma, but if anybody out there knows anybody from Montezuma, it's usually Montezuma chocolate, dark chocolate buttons. Hmm. Okay. How did that taste to you? Mm. How did it taste to you, Leo? Good. So, chocolate. This isn't a workshop on chocolate. It's a talk about listening from the heart. So taking the time, what I'm going to do is invite you to close your eyes. Now, if at any stage this feels like it's a bit too much or a bit too intense, feel free to open your eyes and kind of regulate yourself. But my invitation is to close your eyes and take a long out breath. In breath and a long out breath. In breath and a long out breath. Now moving awareness to the sounds that surround you. Notice the chatter of the mind. Just come back to sounds. And moving awareness to the light through closed eyelids. Or the light coming to your open eyes. Notice how that feels, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. Moving awareness now to the sense of taste. Moving awareness to the sense of smell. Moving awareness to the sense of touch. So the warmth or coolness of the body. Aware also of the points of pressure where the body is supported. Now moving awareness inside the body, particularly moving awareness into the lower half of the body, and it might support the process of if you're placing one hand on the tummy. Imagining the hand giving care and support. Sensing in to the lower half of the body, the different organs, the stomach, the liver, kidneys, intestines, the bladder. Notice if there's sensations of discomfort, which is useful information. Notice the chatter of the mind. Just come back to sensing into the lower half of the body. Right here, right now. If it's too intense, open the eyes. Orientate yourself But if it's just a slight discomfort or restlessness, stay with the process. Inside the lower half of the body, it's a great deal of wisdom. There's thousands and thousands of neurons, similar to the neurons in the brain. And our emotions flow through the digestive system. This wisdom is contained in popular language, such as gut feeling. Gut instinct. Difficult to digest. So sensing into the lower half of the body. I often find the experience of sensing into my body is akin to allowing my eyes to adjust to the dark. Those times when you step out from a bright room into a dark sky and slowly the eyes adjust and it's possible to see clearly. But it takes time. So sensing into the tummy. And the sensing can have an emotional tone to it as well. So the intention of the emotional tone of sensing into it is one of kind, patient curiosity. There is this magic shared moment, this emergent shared moment here in London, sensing into my gut, and wherever people listening throughout the world, sensing into themselves, alive. Connected. And moving awareness from the tummy, moving the awareness into the upper part of the body, and again, maybe supporting it by placing a hand around the heart area. Notice how that feels. The experience is unique. No one else knows how it feels for you. No one else knows the memories contained within this process of touching and holding yourself. So, as I said about the stomach, all the neurons that create a brain in the belly. There's also a brain in the heart. Thousands upon thousands of neurons. And again, in our language, the intuitive wisdom, heartfelt, warm-hearted, broken-hearted, kind-hearted, cold-hearted. Our language contains knowledge that this organ contains a great deal of the human experience. One of the things I've noticed sitting here, going through this process, is that my breathing has changed. Notice the breath. Notice the chattering of the mind and come back to the felt experience in the heart area. This organ that has been beating since before your birth. This organ that will have been the rhythm, the first sounds that the fetus, which was you, will have heard. So this heart area, this heart has felt all the pains, all the joys, all the excitements, all the confusions that make up your life. So this heart doesn't age in a linear fashion, but contains all of those experiences. So meeting oneself with kindness in the heart, knowing how often we speak to ourselves in ways that would horrify other people if we spoke to them in that way. So bringing into the heart some forgiveness, some kindness, some understanding. So when you're ready, opening the eyes, notice how you feel now. Notice whether that's changed, this process. So, listening from the heart. So one of the things, the primary thing I teach, and anybody who's ever heard me teach will know that I say, pretty much I teach one thing, that mindful communication, which is what I teach, is about creating a quality of connection with ourselves and with others where everyone's needs matter. So I'll say that again. It's about creating a quality of connection with ourselves and with others where everyone's needs matter. So I'm hoping that having done, engaged in this process of listening, going inside, moving the mind, will have had a number of different benefits. One, it kind of it has an integrating effect on the mind. You know, I often find if my mind is a bit speedy, and when I first sat down, I was overexcited, and when I get excited, I tend towards mischief and mayhem, chaos. I was also wanting to invite the other parts of myself that are kind of serious, sensitive, hopefully warm. I'm wanting to bring those in, but it's difficult. A lifetime of being mischievous, having to sit still in a chair at school, kind of leads me that my default mode is to be naughty. I brought this fellow along. Don't know whether you can see him. This is, he kind of represents, he's one of my favorite things in the whole world. He was made for me by my partner, and he represents that part of me that is very young and needs a lot of love. So I take him with me. He wears similar clothes to what, he actually has different sets of clothes. And I kind of, you know, he and I get on reasonably well, and I want to kind of have a good relationship with that more vulnerable childlike part of myself. So where was that? What was I going to say? Oh yes, so I was talking about creating a quality of connection with ourselves and others where everyone's needs matter. So the quality of connection has, I'm hoping we had some of that, or you had some of that in going through listening sensitively, tuning into oneself. That quality of connection that has warmth, kindness, forgiveness, curiosity. So that's the quality of connection we have with ourselves, but we have to have that with others as well. So we have to hold those two things in mind, creating a quality connection with ourselves and others where everyone's needs matter. Everyone's needs matter. There are not that many needs. Human beings have very few needs. And one of the things I've been thinking recently is often when I say to people, so what are the human needs? I often say there's only seven. There's seven human needs. They come in broad brackets. You know, so one bracket is physical well-being. In the bracket of physical well-being, and you imagine these as Venn diagrams, in the bracket of physical well-being, it will include things like sleep, food, rest, warmth, shelter, hygiene, touch. So that's one broad bracket. So the other six, often when I sort of say to groups, I say, what are the other six groups? And then there'll be somebody in the group say, what is Maslow's hierarchy of needs? What is Maslow's hierarchy of needs? Now, one of the things about that is Maslow, I think, is fundamentally wrong, because he's got this base. Yeah, this is my genius. He's got the primary base is, you know, shelter, warmth, etc. And then you move up to self-actualization. But I think as a baby, as a mammal that is totally dependent upon its caregivers, love is primary. So that love, if there is that love there, there's pretty much the guarantee that if there is food, you'll get it. If there is shelter can be provided, it will be there. So the primary need is not shelter, food, etc. The primary need is to know that we are loved and cared for. Yeah, and that being loved and cared for shapes the brain from an early age. And one of the things I find fascinating, and I was recently re-watching actually, the videos of John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth and their work to do with attachment. So attachment theory is about the primary attachment we have with our caregiver or caregivers. And obviously it's a bit linear, as in it's kind of like we're either, you know, securely attached, avoidantly attached, or anxiously attached, or disorganized attached. But you can watch, one of the amazing things in the modern world is that you can go onto YouTube and you can watch some videos of those attachment theories. And that, when I was watching recently, I was watching the one, I'm from an avoidantly attached background. So those of you who don't know what that is, it means my primary caregivers, when they felt overwhelmed by my emotional experience, had the sense of shutting down, and so weren't able to take on board at times the emotions that were alive in me. So my primary caregiver would have sort of, for whatever reason, maybe overwork, overstress, lack of sleep, or would have kind of shut down and would have wanted me to manage my own emotions. And so when I was watching the video of the avoidantly attached child, I could feel it in my body. I could feel this sense of, oh. So the child, what happens in the avoidant, it's called the stranger experience, or the strange person experience or something like that. I can't exactly remember, but Mary Ainsworth, John Bowlby. Anyway, so the parent is playing with the child. A strange adult comes in, tries to engage the child, the parent leaves, and then what happens with the child? Now, with the avoidantly attached, which is kind of my pattern, the child collapses. Yeah? The child collapses, and when that child collapsed, I could really feel it. So the anxiously attached parent is one who sometimes overwhelms the child, or it is in terms of the boundaries of the child, or is sometimes a bit nervous about the child. And so they're not very good at regulating their own emotions. And so they don't teach the child to regulate their emotions. So the child never gets very skilled at regulating their emotions. I sometimes think of that. So the avoidantly attached is the kind of cold-hearted. The anxiously attached is the overwhelmed drama queen. And it's not that there's anything wrong with either of those. It's just useful to know this is what my pattern is. If you're securely attached, you feel you're generally kind of a healthy disposition and life seems sweeter. But if knowing what your pattern is, what is needed is to reparent ourselves. So to be able to listen to ourselves, to tune in to ourselves, and to learn self-regulation if you tend to be anxiously attached. And if you're avoidantly attached, to learn that it's okay to feel. Yeah, it's okay to feel. The disorganized attached is a much more difficult thing to work with. And it's where the parents were sometimes often it's parents who had addiction problems. And so the child was sometimes not safe, sometimes was safe, sometimes was not. So the threat and the fear coming from the caregiver was kind of, could be quite intense. And so learning how to regulate yourself, where the person that you learn emotional regulation from is also a source of threat, is a very difficult thing to deal with. And as an adult, that can be really hard work. So needing to really meet yourself with kindness. So when I talk about creating a quality of connection with ourselves and others, it is this sense of that within us is a young child. And sometimes we need to parent ourselves with a great deal of love, care, forgiveness, kindness. The child, they were doing their best. They were doing their best. But all of us, no matter, even those who are securely attached, will have split off from parts of themselves because at times they will have misread the situation and they will imagine that their caregivers were disapproving. Now, it may well have been the disapproving look on their parents' face was to do with reading the news. It wasn't to do with them. But for whatever reason, we screen off parts of ourselves. That screening off of parts of ourselves is the basis of shame. Now, for me, I know in America, I think shame is used slightly differently. For me, shame is this process of disowning parts of myself. It is the loneliest place on the planet. So it's kind of like we split off, there's the good me, the bad me, the part of me that feels if I allow that to be seen, I will not be loved, I will not be safe. So knowing that that is there and beginning that process of loving it, beginning that process of knowing that there was a time when you were and still are completely adorable, lovable, trying to find your way to what it means to be a human being. Yeah. And we were, the brain is built by our relationships. It's built through relating. And if you imagine the stresses and strains on our parents and the best conditions that they had, they will have still passed on the conditioning from their parents. They will have not got the love that they wanted either. So if you're over the age of 25, you're an adult, you've got an adult's brain. And so you're now responsible for looking after and reparenting all those parts of yourself. And we're coming now, some of you might have tuned into this because it's the intimacy and relationship channel. And so they're thinking, oh, I want to get on with my partner better. Yeah. And so you're kind of waiting. When are we going to get onto that, Jaya Raja? I'm getting onto it. Yeah. So you cannot love another more than the degree to which you love yourself. You cannot love another more than the degree to which you love yourself. So if there's parts of yourself that you don't love, the penny should drop. There's going to be parts of your partner that you don't love. Yeah. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah. And I think for a relationship to thrive, we must develop friendship. Friendship within ourselves to all the different parts and friendship to our partner. And I love, unfortunately, I didn't bring it with me tonight, but I love the David White, the poet, the Yorkshire poet, has written a number of books, but one of them I was really enjoying is called Consolations, the Meaning and Solace of Everyday Words. And in that, he talks about friendship. Friendship is one of the words. And he says something like, every friendship of any depth and substance is based on mutual forgiveness. Any friendship of any depth is based on mutual forgiveness. Yeah. So as I say, learning to befriend ourselves, and in that, from that basis, being able to develop friendship with others and being able to forgive them. Yeah. Unfortunately, what happens is we often, because of our own wounds and being unwilling to engage with our own wounds, because it's not easy, it's a painful process engaging with our own wounding. We look for somebody to heal us. And this is beautifully written about in the book by James Hollis called The Eden Project, The Search for the Magical Other. So The Search for the Magical Other, The Eden Project. So the wounding in ourselves that we won't look at is projected outward, and we want somebody to heal us. And then what happens if they don't, you know, we then get into this dynamic where the initial projection gives way to the problem of power. You know, you need to be like this. No, you need to be like that. And then sometimes we can settle into an agreement about where power is, but that is not healthy. We need to go beyond the struggle for power, for them to heal us or fix us or be a certain way in us, to realizing that the other is different from us and is not responsible for our growth. We are responsible for our growth and well-being. Yeah. We are responsible for our growth and well-being. That's difficult to take on board, but you're an adult. If you're over 25, you're an adult. You're under 25, just keep blaming your parents. But you've only got another, you know, if you're 24, you've got a year more, and then that's it. stop. But in fact, when you're 24, you can start to sort of think, oh, I need to let go of this soon. So you kind of scale down a bit. So it's when you hit 25, you can sort of think, okay, yeah. So where was I? So let me just take a moment. Whilst I'm taking a moment, I invite you to take a moment as well. And if I was in a workshop or giving a talk, I would ask somebody to shout some abuse at me, which would really help me. It'd help me reconnect with myself and sort of, but I don't think either Leo or Dino are going to shout any abuse at me. Oh, thank you. Yes. So I take that as playful rather than kind of wanting to help. His desire to contribute told me I'm a bell end. It is true, actually. I can be. So creating a quality connection with ourselves and others where everyone's needs matter. Yeah, and I was talking then about how not getting a partner to fix you. Though it's important that though we're not getting a partner to try and fix us, and that we can't love somebody more than we love ourselves, there is a quote by Albert Schweitzer, who said something like, "We all owe a debt of gratitude to those who have rekindled the flame within us when it has gone out." We all owe a debt of gratitude to those who have rekindled the flame within us when it's gone out. So being able to take that in, sometimes we need other people to reconnect that we are lovable. Yeah. Sometimes we need others to help us reconnect that we are lovable. Yeah. So yeah, this remembering also, I was kind of talking about shame and that being the loneliest place on the planet. Yeah. So I've banged on a bit. I didn't realize I was going to do that. I generally, in case you haven't noticed, I generally don't know what I'm talking about until I kind of start talking. And I just hope it is coherent. But if it isn't, that's all right too. Yeah. So, yes, there's another idea I wanted to share. And that is the idea, as well as creating a quality connection with ourselves and others where everyone's needs matter, and there only being a limited number of needs. Yeah, I talked about seven. In fact, is it possible to put the slide up of the seven needs according to Jayaraja? I still haven't won a Nobel Prize for this yet, but there's, you know, so if anybody has got any sway, please kind of speak up for me. Yeah. So, I'm hoping a slide will be presented now. And if it isn't, you can sort of ask for your money back on this free recording. So, okay, it's not coming up. So I'll carry on. So it seems like I'm doing okay, according to Mini Jayaraja. So I wanted to, one of the things, yes, so I was talking about childhood and how the child is still very present within us. And one of the things about children is they tend to be very black and white, good and bad, right and wrong. And again, that is useful as a child. But as an adult, we realize that there is a great deal more complexity to life than right and wrong, good and bad. So, I think we need to get to be able to focus. You remember at the start, we were moving the mind through the senses. So you realize that you can move your mind. You can focus in different areas. Your mind is your responsibility. And the mind affects the heart. In fact, in Buddhism, they talk about the mind as being based in the heart. Yeah. So listening to the heart, creating that quality of connection with ourselves. And then going beyond thinking in terms of right and wrong, but instead focusing on needs. Every human being, with every action that they do, are trying to meet a need. They really are trying to meet a need. Now, some of the strategies that we might choose to meet a need are tragic. I know I have got tragic ways where I meet my needs. You know, ways where I overeat, or I distract myself too much on Facebook or reading sport. And often what it is, it's a longing, it's a compensatory pattern for a longing for connection. A longing to kind of meet myself. And rather than do that, I engage in practices that kind of give me temporary relief or temporary pleasure, but they don't leave me feeling more deeply connected with myself and the mystery and magic of being alive. One of the things I found recently actually is that I now live in the countryside, and there's a sense being in nature and seeing the awesomeness of the night sky puts me in touch with a depth of meaning that is deeply nourishing, much more so than looking at Facebook.
Yeah. So, Guy Raja.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. I won't say anything rude, although you did ask me to earlier.
Okay. No, you can if you want, but, you know, let's take it as it comes.
So we've got a few questions in the Q&A, and we've also got your slide. Which would you like to do first?
Okay, I'm seeing one of the questions up there and I really like it. How can one keep their heart open when they feel it is closing? Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the thing about this is a practice, it's kind of like being a human being is a constant practice. I can't remember who said it, but it's just come to me now, which is being a human being is a constant humiliation. Yeah. So that humility to kind of acknowledge that I don't live according to my values from moment to moment, but knowing that I can fail and I can be a blockhead, but still be kind to myself is just so important. The idea of perfection is a childish thought. Yeah. The child wants to be perfect in order to be loved, because the child doesn't realize how lovable it is. So the child within us didn't realize how amazing the life energy flowing through us was. So yeah, keeping noticing when the heart wants to close and opening it, but noticing particularly in relation to yourself. Yeah. So the more you can open the heart in relation to yourself and acknowledge your failings and your weaknesses and your shortcomings with kindness and compassion, it will naturally start to spill out. So if you imagine your good friends, you know, if one of your good friends was upset or tired or had made a mistake at work, your heart would go out towards them. And you would kind of want to, you know, sort of reassure them. You would want them to know that they are loved and cared about. Learning to do that for ourselves. Yeah. And sometimes being able to ask for it from others. So I know sometimes what happens if I'm doing a workshop and I think, oh, Roger, that was chaotic. I will contact a friend and I'll sort of say, you've been to lots of my workshops. Am I any good at this? Can you tell me something I've done that you've appreciated and that has been nourishing to me? Anyway, any more questions? I'll take some more questions. Those on the screen, I can see some of you. Do you want some questions? Put your hands up if you want a question. Yeah? You want me to answer questions? Put your hand up if you're still alive. Oh yeah, so, all right. Okay, yes. So the ones who have fallen asleep didn't put their hands up. That's, yeah. But it's good to know that I helped some people fall asleep. You know, I've obviously got a soothing voice and a very dull manner.
So Jai Raja, just to say, yep. we've got 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and you've got your slide, and we've also got 5 questions actually in the Q&A.
All right.
I see people are raising their hand in the participant box. My sense is to go for a couple of the questions that are in the Q&A first, just because some of them have been sitting there a little while. Is that okay? Can I read those to you?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Okay. So what about feeling like you love your partner more than you love yourself?
Oh, that's Yeah, that puts you in a very vulnerable position. If that you love your partner is, you know, it depends on how long you've been with them. But if you've been with them some time, you'll realize that they've got lots of faults too. Yeah. And so, and maybe they have the same pattern with you, is that they think you're more lovable than you think of yourself. So I think learning to take the time to appreciate yourself. I think with your intimate relationship, it's good to develop not just that dependence upon the one person. Yeah. So yes, that one person, the intimate lover, can be a really beautiful mirror and help you learn to love yourself. But you do need to broaden out. You need to develop friendships. Yeah. And also, this is again from David White, and he said, a good diagnostic of a life spiraling towards trouble is a shrinking circle of friends. So by friend, I mean somebody that you're able to be deeply intimate with. So learning to be deeply intimate, not just with your lover and partner, but learning to be intimate with friends. Ideally, I find it easier to develop intimacy with same-sex friends, so there's no confusion, but actually, you know, developing intimacy as much and widely as possible. I don't know whether that answers the question, but that's what comes to mind. Any more questions, Harmony?
Yep, so we've got a few ones here. Some of them are very long and very personal, so I'm gonna come back to those. Mm-hmm. No disrespect, but just so we can, how do I help my 18-year-old son to learn to self-regulate when I have been an anxiously attached parent who often becomes overwhelmed by his emotions, especially those deemed negative, and still have trouble regulating my own emotions? I see his struggles now with his resistance to feeling his feelings and expressing them. And I think people are interested in that.
Thank you for asking that question. It touches me. Thank you for the honesty in kind of sharing that. So the best, it's not going to be easy. It's, you know, like the thing about how can you keep your heart open when it wants to close. It is a practice and a process. I think one of the most useful things you can do is learn to meditate. So learning to meditate is about increasing this dialogue of meeting ourselves with kindness. That's what I would see as meditation. Meditation is sitting, it's not blanking the mind, it is meeting ourselves with kindness. So the more you do that, then the more you're able to do it with your son, but also being able to show or share with your son your vulnerability. Your vulnerability owned is a great example. By owning your vulnerability, what I mean is the capacity to sort of acknowledge that I feel this wound, but not identifying with it as just that's what I am. Having the strength to sort of say, I am wounded, and I feel sad with this, but I want to be able to support. Yeah. Or I feel overwhelmed, I'd really like to, you know, to help. But also it's important not to try and fix people. You know, so, you know, if your son is dysregulated, it can also, you know, notice how that impacts you and sort of work with that. And in working with that, actually, it gives a good mirror for him to learn to work with himself. But it's not going to be an overnight thing. It's going to be a process.
Thank you for that. There's lots of questions coming in now, and we have still got the slide. So yeah. I'll read this question. How can I love when fear always runs the show? Mm. I always feel people are using me, and therefore I enter relationships thinking, what can they do for me because I'm scared to give to them?
Mm. Yeah, fear. It's kind of like fear to be seen. And I think it, again, you know, it's this, I'm talking about meditation again. It's kind of learning to sort of be with yourself gently over time, of sort of maybe even just saying to yourself, I am lovable. You know, here you are on the planet. There's never been another person like you. And it's okay to be frightened. It is, it can be, life can be scary. But it's kind of learning to locate where the fear is in your body. I often do this. You might have noticed that I've So it's kind of like helping me kind of connect with my body, feeling where the fear is, and gently taking my time to breathe into it, particularly lengthen the out-breath if you're feeling frightened. Lengthen the out-breath, yeah? You might find a good therapist as well that is able to see you and model valuing you and not being frightened of your fear. That can be helpful.
Is there such a thing as applying tough love towards ourselves? Can we be too forgiving of bad habits, etc.?
So can you read the first bit of that again, Harmony? I didn't catch it.
Yeah. Is there such a thing as applying tough love towards ourselves? Can we be too forgiving of bad habits, etc.?
So if we've got bad habits, it's often an aspect of deep wounding. And it's kind of like being able to hold both the deep wounding and holding our aspiration to be different, rather than sort of thinking we have to overpower one, yeah, that we cut out. It's kind of like, let's hold both. So I want to be less on Facebook or less distracted or less kind of greedy, overeating. And I also want to be able to be patient with myself that sometimes I'm feeling anxious, you know, childhood patterns or whatever. And I'm holding both of them. I'm holding my aspiration and I'm holding my failing as well. And within the failing, there is a need. Yeah. And it's kind of learning to be a good educator to ourselves rather than sort of you need to. Any kind of shoulds shut us down and move us towards that place of shame. So knowing that shame is a place within us and being curious to explore the great mansion that is our psyche, or is our inner being. Patience.
Thank you. And we have probably time for a couple more questions, so we won't get to everyone's today, but a few people have asked this one. How can I learn to talk from my heart and not from my head?
So the idea of speaking from the heart, this will be a bit long-winded, but hopefully it'll be helpful. I was kind of on a 15-day, I've done quite a lot of training with Marshall Rosenberg. I think his book is brilliant, by the way, Nonviolent Communication, the Language of Life. Anyway, I was on a 15-day residential with Marshall, and I was trying to figure this out, and there was this conflict going on in the room, and it was chaotic, and there was all these so-called skilled communicators. And then suddenly, I felt into my heart, and then I suddenly realized, oh, if I can listen to my heart, it knows what to say. Yeah. And if I can imagine what's in somebody else's heart, so this imagination of what might be in somebody else's heart, then I start to take care of the words that I use. Yeah. And I'm curious. I don't know what's in somebody else's heart. So I'm always kind of have this sense of curiosity. So I've forgotten what the question was now, but I think the answer was brilliant. So
the question was, how can I learn to talk from my heart and not from my head?
All right. Again, it's a process. The more you practice it, the more you practice sort of listening to the heart and finding the words. So I've brought my headgear with me, and I better use it. This is the conventional way of how we kind of relate in the world. So there's this hand is pointing out of blaming, you know, who's the idiot here? And this is the head speaking. Who is the idiot? Is it them? Kind of took that finger in. It looks a bit rude otherwise. And or is it me? Yeah. And in this one that's pointing towards me, you'll see that there's the heart being squeezed. Yeah. So it's kind of like we go through life in terms of this is the right and wrong model. You know, you're wrong or I'm wrong. Yeah. So learning to kind of move away from that to this. This is now my, this, you can't get this on Amazon. This kind of, this is just an outward manifestation of the inner wisdom that takes a long time to develop. So this one here, it's kind of like this heart, and it's got the hearts there. And so it's kind of like, can I listen to my own heart? So when there is a conflict, oh yes, that's it. I wanted to share this mnemonic. It's brilliant. Again, I don't know whether I get a Nobel Prize for this, but it's kind of stop. So rather than speaking from the head, stop. So the S stands for stop. The T stands for tune in. This is the heart, tune into the heart. The O stands for out-breath, lengthen the out-breath. The P stands for perspective. Can I take multiple perspectives on this? Can I take the other person's perspective? Can I tune in to what is the actual data? What is it that actually triggered me feeling, you know, annoyed, irritated, frustrated, rageful? What is it that was the trigger? So what is the actual data? And then also consider the consequences. If I carry through this feeling and express it this way, what is likely to be the consequences? So stop. S for stop. Don't say anything else. Shut the fuck up. O, a T, tune in. O, out breath. P, perspective. So yeah, the practice, generally, the more you do it, the more the neural connections will develop. So you get more skilled at speaking from the heart. So every time I tune into my heart, the neural connections are strengthened. So yeah. So don't, one thing is important, not to give yourself a hard time. So the ideas are easy, but the practice of learning to communicate and listen from the heart takes a lot of work. Yeah, you're having to undo all that practice of doing it, of right and wrong thinking and getting over that. Okay, Harmony, another question?
We're out of time.
Time.
Yeah. 2 minutes to the hour. Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful, you know, really heartful and really funny and really deep for me personally. That's so lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harmony.
We're going to do a few final announcements and then I'll come back for a top tip at the end from you. So I just want to oh my goodness, I don't know what the next session is happening. Maybe Kat will message me in the chat, but there's something coming up and there's people desperate to see the slide as well. So I don't know if we can, you know, do that before we close. But if stuff is coming up from you, our tech is now going to put some links in the chat. So please check them. So there are coffee breakout rooms after each session. So if you're enthusiastic and you want to chat with people or you've got stuff coming up and you want to bounce some ideas or share, please do jump in there. They are for you. We've got a Facebook group for the Embodiment Conference and also for this channel. So do engage with that if you can. Have we got a website for you, my friend?
No, I don't have a website.
Sorry, everyone. No website.
But I am creating a retreat center called Alfoxden Park, and you can come there and I'll be teaching there quite regularly when we've rebuilt it.
Yeah. Great. Okay. And then just to say a little bit about the recordings, you can watch this recording again and all of the others for 48 hours. And then after that, if you can buy, we would love it if you would buy. Yes, look at the little man. He says yes, buy the recordings. It's a massive thank you to the Embodiment Conference for all the work. It's a huge gift to yourself to just watch all this material at your own pace. And also for those people who really can't afford to buy the recordings, it allows us to keep giving out this free material. So thank you so much. Final word to our speaker. I dare and ask what it might be. It could be something really rude or funny or profound. But what is your top tip, Jai Raja, on how to be more embodied?
Dance. Make sure you dance.
Dance.
Be silly. Move. Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you so much. So massive thank you to Jai Raja. Thank you to all of you for your attention. Yes, celebrate this man. Enjoy the rest of the conference and we'll speak to you on another session. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Harmony.